And welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Dan Fernandez.
I'm Charles Torrey.
And Charles, you're not on This Week on Channel 9 that often.
No, I mean, I usually don't spend a lot of time. I like watching you and Brian Keller go off on really interesting things related to programmers. I think it's good.
And the last time you were on were actually Miguel de Caza.
Yes, that was fun. I recommend people watch that. It was one of the mixed Channel 9 Live.
Yeah. Actually, Miguel is, you know, we're not talking about it here, but Miguel's probably a little happy because of the mono, some of the things that Apple had reversed their decisions for in the App Store that allows mono. So a lot of people that are using mono and C# to develop apps on MonoTouch.
Beautiful.
So
interesting.
Kudos to Miguel.
Right on, Miguel.
But let's get into some stories.
Yes.
So Enterprise Logging Library.
Now, yes.
Now, you know our homies at in the Patterns and Practices team.
I do. Michael Lehman and company. I know those guys.
So the idea is they've had the Enterprise Library for a while, does a lot of things for logging information, logging of application information via trace statements, being able to filter out certain statements like, hey, let me just see where within my application's setting things, and I only want to listen to these kind of errors. Maybe just network errors or network information or memory usage, whatever it happens to be. This is how you get it to work in Azure. So Azure already includes some logging and Azure diagnostic information, which, you know, Duncan and Sampy and those guys use that all the time.
I'm sure they do.
This probably gives you more control and fidelity around the amount of information is. And more importantly, it's just how you set it up.
Great, which is very important for people making a bet on this.
OAuth.
Uh-oh. Yes.
Windows Phone 7. A lot of just around Windows Phone 7. So this is really about, I want to build, I'm a Windows Phone 7 app developer. I want to use services that are using OAuth. And OAuth seems to be a pretty popular service. I think Dig, Twitter, Facebook, a lot of different services are using OAuth. So how do you actually build an app that does OAuth authentication? This article actually goes through it.
Excellent.
So for people that are looking to do it, OAuth and Facebook. Scott Gu.
Ooh, another framework by Scott.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
I think he's
into frameworks.
By the framework.
He does, doesn't he?
Yeah, he probably does. It'd be hilarious if we actually found out, well, I shipped another three frameworks.
Yes, he did.
Web Matrix, we got
wow.
A lot of stuff.
Right on, Scott.
So this is the Web Farm Framework, and he goes through, like, it's a classic Scott Guthrie tutorial post of everything going through it. The idea is you want to be able to, you have a bunch of IIS servers, you want to be able to manage them as a group, as a web farm. So this Web Farm Framework gives you the code and the information that you can actually install and run and manage all of your web farm machines. So you can increase load balancing machines. You can create, or it has built-in load balancing, increase caching machines.
Wow.
You can monitor what's going on within the applications, diagnostic information, and so forth. So, but the interesting part, and this is one of the things we were discussing, was when would somebody use this versus Azure?
I mean, that's a great question. I mean, theoretically, when you deploy your website to Azure, you don't think about this stuff, right? It abstracts it away from you. It's going to scale for you. It's going to definitely load balance. It's going to geolocate for you. So this is interesting. So my assumption is this is real hardware that you own and operate.
Yeah.
And then you get this nice simplified, essentially, admin tool to run over it.
Yeah, and it may be that, you know, there's a class of applications where you actually need the hardware. Maybe you're putting something in the GAC, maybe, because Azure's great for when you have something that doesn't, you don't need to touch the hardware or change the OS or change, you know, certain aspects of it. As long as you can live within that area, then you're great. When you need full access to the machine to rebuild, to do whatever, then this is probably the solution for it.
I also wonder if this would work over a virtual server farm where you're using like the VM role on Azure or something.
Yeah, that's another question. Like how would this work if you were using Hyper-V? Does it just show like where I have, imagine 10 servers, that's really just one massive box. So ideally you'd be able to manage them all as if they were separate instances in your web farm.
Cool, we'll have to get Scott on Channel 9, huh?
Yeah.
All right.
So the other Scott, Scott Hanselman. So he had some nice kudos for Clint.
Cool.
On this, and Clint sent I think Pete and Hanselman Netduino. So we had worked with the Netduino guys.
This thing.
Yeah, and our good friends Colin Miller as well. So the idea is it's the .NET Micro framework. You can actually build applications in Visual Studio and deploy directly there and even hit breakpoints.
Nice.
Right? So Scott goes through building his first application, which is kind of funny. It's colors the onboard LEDs using Morse code. So you give it a set of characters, and he found some nice code that does convert text to Morse code.
Awesome.
So if you're looking to play with it, there's a lot of cool stuff that you can do in the Micro framework, actually. We were just kicking around some ideas with Larry on stuff to do for your office.
Totally, and I know Lightbulb has some good ideas.
Yeah, I'd love us to have a really simple way to do office monitoring, right? So you could actually get like the motion sensor when somebody enters in your office.
No, man. No, because I have a feeling that you're going to end up using that and be like, wow, it's 11:30. A little late for Charles, man. He usually rolls in around 10:30, man. No, I feel you. I hear you.
Yeah.
That could be fun.
Well, I think it'd just be great to, like, you know, you could actually call your phone the second somebody is in there, because you get the motion sensor event, and you tell it to send a text message, or you tell it to send a message to Twitter, and you sign up for text messages on it. You call your phone, it's like, what are you doing in my office?
Totally. Or here's
or
another
turn
option.
Turn it on speaker.
Well, or another option.
Your machine automatically connect to Skype.
You could make it a service, and then I could subscribe to it through some sort of agreement, and I would know when Lightbulb was in his office. Or I know you when you're in your office. I want to go randomize Dan or something.
Mm-hmm.
So he's in his office or he's not in his office, right?
Does he look stressed?
Yeah, totally.
How
Hook
many
it up to the mood sensor.
Head.
Yeah, how many little items did Jeff give him? I like that, man. I like that. It's all good.
But
very cool work. Yeah. I love what these guys do.
We got to find some time in the holidays or something to play with this stuff. Okay, deferred load list box.
Oh, yeah.
So David Anson... Who? Yeah, exactly. It's very exciting.
It would be nice to say that in like what was his name from like the 70s, man? The kind of the love singer with the really deep voice.
Deferred load list box.
Yeah,
I know who you're talking about. He's a
you know what I'm saying,
chef
baby?
From South Park, right?
Rock and roll.
Okay.
Anyway, sorry.
So the idea is, you got an app. We've been talking about the Facebooks or the Twitters. You're loading a bunch of people's names and images, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you got a bunch of stuff. Windows Phone, obviously you're on limited hardware. How do you do this in a performant way?
Mm-hmm.
So he walks through a deferred load list box and to basically defer what things that you're getting. So you're not basically waiting to load 200 items in Facebook before the app is responsive. Like
yes.
The UX guidelines talk about making sure your app is responsive. And so forth. So he goes through all the details on the implementation, things that you should do and look at. So
perfect. Yeah, I mean, you know, please, when you're building applications, think about the user, right? So
yeah.
Be asynchronous, man. Do as much thing as you can. And also, I just want to, you know, call out my brother Eric and his
team.
Yeah,
go for it.
Because RX ships in the phone and will ship in the phone.
Reactive extensions
for .NET.
Yes.
And so you should play around with that. I mean, there is a little bit of a ramp up, but you get it on the phone. It's all about asynchronous programming. Play around with it. The Niners are well aware of it, so I just wanted to throw that out there.
Sure. Speaking of other cool stuff, Pelly, our good friend Pelly, is on the
Rise team.
Rise team. A lot of people know him through PAX.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea here is there's an add-in to the Visual Studio in the Visual Studio Gallery that adds IntelliSense to code contracts. So so we have a substring method, and Charles, as you can see, quizzing you. What do these contracts say, Charles?
Well, number one, this is cure. So that's actually kind of a vague term, but I like it.
Yeah.
So essentially, it's telling you where your start index has to fall, start at a certain range, can't fall below a certain range. Same thing here, can't be less than the length. So it's a way of guaranteeing that if these conditions aren't met, to you're done, right? You didn't make the contract. I'm not going to compile. Right. You're going to know at compile time that you're screwed.
As opposed to runtime, right?
Yes. Sure. So contract-oriented programming is awesome, and I love to see that these guys are actually building it into the sort of the editing experience. Which brings up another good point. When last time I did this show with you, we talked about the Visual Studio Code Gallery. Remember? Yeah. It was when we were the launch.
Sure.
So this is on the Code Gallery, which is very cool. But I'd like to go back sometime and revisit some of the other great things that are there. But this I find cool.
Yeah.
So you essentially can hover over a method or a class or something, a method obviously, and then you can see what the contracts are for that method, just as you can see what types it has, what's properties, blah, 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 blah,
right.
blah.
Right.
I like it.
I do too. This is cool stuff.
Those guys are rock stars, man.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely cool stuff. And, you know, it sort of beats you having to do the if my index is this. All the stuff that method, the implementer of that method has to do is I can now say it in a much more declarative way. Because normally I'd be saying if the value is this, if the value is that, if the value is this, if the value is that, and then go party on it. Now I can just do that declaratively and set.
It's great.
Must be a number, must be within this range.
And again, I mean, that brings up a great point, man, because this is public string M. Therefore, this is going to be consumed by foreign consumers, right? It's going to be nice if I get a method from Dan that I need to use in my project. You've already taken care of a lot of the contractual work for me. I might not know exactly what it is, but by hovering over it, I can see it.
Yeah, I mean, like say M was it's some employee thing, and you know the employee name can't be more than 1,000 characters because your database doesn't have 1,000. Mm-hmm. You can have a contract that says max number of characters.
Perfect, man.
So,
good stuff.
There's our love fest for code contracts.
Yes. That's about all you're going to get, man.
Coding for Fun. So this is a new article on Coding for Fun by Lincoln Anderson from 352 Media. Mm. So I'm ashamed to say that I built this first UI, and it was a very functional UI.
Sure.
But the idea was we were building a cannon that could be drivable. So it was a Windows Phone application that could drive basically what was a BattleBot base that had a Windows 7 machine, and we're sending in HTTP commands. So this is my original version, and what this article shows is how you can take an app that's built in Silverlight and actually skin it. So like changing these things, which were toggle buttons, to a slider control, and some of the things that they do to optimize performance. So this is actually a background image. The only part that's dynamic is this part that's changing, and there's an overlay graphic that appears here. So that way, you know, instead of your application constantly having all these things be native Silverlight things where I have to maintain, you know, hundreds of objects potentially, do one image, and then you can bitmap cache that image and then draw on top of it.
So just, you know, with no disrespect to this, I mean, this is beautiful, but this is obvious for me, right? Go forward, plus increased momentum, you know, go faster speed. So I like this from a simplicity. This is beautiful. Let me ask you a question, though. Can I touch this, and does it go in reverse?
Yeah.
Okay. And so I do this. You had to add another touch and pull and move.
No, because the slider control that's built in automatically has touch.
Nice.
So we're able to inherit the values of the property. And the way that the slider works is basically starts at 0 and goes to 1. And then we make a decision whether to stay in forward or reverse by dividing whatever the current value is. So let's say it's at 0.4. Then 0.4 divided by 2 should therefore be forward. If it's, say, 0.55, then it's greater, so it should be in reverse.
Cool.
And you get a really nice sort of experience. But back to your point on the experience, like it feels like you just almost want to play with it and shift it.
Excellent, man. And so one quick question then I would have is, what does this do?
This is actually how you drive. These are the controls for the vehicle, right? So this is drive mode, this is shoot mode, this is aiming mode, and this is shoot mode.
So you can only go straight and forward. You can't turn.
You can turn.
Okay.
Which is another,
like this accelerometer.
Exactly.
Nice.
Exactly.
Nice. Okay.
So that way, you can move left and right.
Beautiful, man. That was a really cool. So it's a Coding for Fun project now. Skinning.
Yeah. And I think the big thing is, I know I suck. And certainly a lot of people do. How do designers and how do people that do like interaction design take an app and actually skin it, right? What are the things that actually go through that process? So you can make your apps hopefully more attractive.
Totally. Well, clearly. All right.
Yeah.
Right on.
Jaime and Yohai start a new series.
Cool.
So this is Inside Windows Phone. We just talked about some of the performance things, but they had Shane, who has a performance hooper and samples out now as a guest of the show. So there's a lot of cool stuff that they were talking about.
Mm-hmm. So. Absolutely. I mean, I think one of the things that people need to understand is just because it's running essentially a virtual machine on top of the operating system, which, you know, CLR or Silverlight on top of Windows Phone 7 or whatever the operating system is, CE, doesn't mean it's not, you're going to get bad performance, right? I mean, mm-hmm. .NET still, I see out in the community, I mean, people are always like, you know, you have CLR, there's overhead, sorry. Point them to Rico Mariani's blog articles, read them, understand. Yes, there's going to be an overhead, but not as bad as you think, mm-hmm. and users won't really experience. So I love the fact that they posted this on Channel 9 recently. And Jaime and Yohai are developers.
Yeah.
So they're going to get really geeky. And that's good stuff.
Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to this series. It's the Inside Windows Phone, and they're already on episode 3. The first one was kind of an intro.
4 released today.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Ah, there we go.
Yeah, and I think it's about push-based notifications.
Oh, that'd be a good one.
Totally.
So, check it out. All right, so picks of the week.
All right.
I know, very exciting.
Oh, man, what is that, Dan?
Everybody must draw a teapot. That's like one of the things. You have to build an 8-ball, a teapot, I'm trying to think, a Twitter service.
Okay.
And a Northwind demo. That's like getting an EGOT. Okay, so this is the Baldur 3D engine. It's a Silverlight 3D engine. It just went out on Codeplex. We actually have an article on doing a Rubik's Cube 3D article.
Hmm.
3D solver.
Nice.
For Coding for Fun coming soon.
Wow.
So that Clint was telling me about. So, but the idea is, love Codeplex. Somebody mm-hmm. else builds, you know, some badass stuff, and everybody gets to reuse it.
So that brings up a good point. A good Windows Phone 7 app would definitely be a Rubik's Cube.
Yeah,
dude,
I'm
coding
sure
for fun.
Working on it.
Probably.
Yeah,
that would be really cool.
Yeah,
I mean, I could see sitting around waiting to do something and just—it's always nice to have the tactile experience.
Yeah,
though,
yeah.
But what are you going to do? Cool, man. Or just have that and you can just spin it around. Whoa. Okay. Yes.
Okay. Do we have the helmet?
Helmet head.
Oh God. Oh God. This is.
So I want to put a helmet on for this. Well, yeah, I want to put this. This is a space helmet, man.
We spent $5,000 on props today because it's Charles's birthday.
It's my birthday. I'm turned. Don't say how old I am.
They're gonna guess, right?
He's got small ears.
They're gonna guess.
All right. So here's the deal, man. This is interesting. So this was actually released yesterday, but September 9th, September 10th. What's the difference? It turns out that one of the basic constants in physics,
yes.
Like, you know, physics is all about math, right? They love to have universal constants so they can rely on.
And a lot of equations.
A lot of equations. This is actually an important one called alpha that these guys have determined. A group of scientists, actually, hard to believe, from Australia. They weren't doing the hard work, Nick. The guys in England were just playing.
Yes.
So it turns out they've found that there is variation in a universal constant that's called alpha that could really change physical laws as we think they are. So according to us, we like to think that everything in the universe is understandable. These are just little subtle things that are coming our way to show that that's probably not the case. Anyway, keep an eye on this. The paper's not out yet. It's the alpha. And go ahead to Science Daily and read this article. You'll understand what's going on.
I thought was interesting was the laws of physics could vary. You know, we'll have local laws of physics, meaning physics around our area of the universe or maybe our galaxy or whatever,
mm-hmm.
versus another galaxy could be different, and that could mean ours is easier to promote life, others are harder to promote life, and that's
a great
a
point.
A lot of different things.
So. Locality.
Yeah.
So laws of the universe, I like the way they kind of described it in this brief article, sort of the bylaws, the local bylaws.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense what is sort of around us, and around us is actually pretty far. But as you get way, way out, they're finding that these rules tend to not necessarily be as constant as they thought, which goes to what you were saying, that life like ours may not exist out there because it has different set of physical laws.
Yeah.
And people have speculated about this for a while. It was nice to actually see some science behind it.
Yeah. But
anyway, this is a good thing. It's, you know, it's the weekend, so
yeah.
You know, have fun.
And put on a helmet.
Put on a helmet, run around your house, and freak out your family.
Awesome. All right, so people are going to guess your age in the...
Yes, that's the agenda for today. Guess the age.
Guess the age. Wish Charles a happy birthday.
But I will give one caveat.
Uh-oh.
I am, you know, the master banner.
So you're going to ban it.
So be good, man.
He looks 15, I swear.
Then that'll work. Anyway, hey, it's been fun coming on the show with you.
Always a pleasure.
Right on.
Thanks.
Cheers.